Now broadcasting in English.
Welcome to weekend programming here at the International Service of Czech Radio, Radio Prague. I'm Jan Wellinger. In today's edition, join us as we travel to the historic South Bohemian town of Tábor. We'll also have a new edition of Czech Books for you that is presented by David Vaughan, commemorating the 69th anniversary of the destruction of the village of Ligice near Prague by the Nazis. That was in 1942. And David will stay with us for our popular series From the Archives. We begin first, though, with Spotlight, which was produced by Chris Jarrett, a fascinating visit to Tábor.
An hour and a half journey south of Prague lies the medieval Hussite town of Tábor. Upon first arrival, as you step out onto a busy square from the packed train station, the place looks nothing out of the ordinary. But once you pass the bustling high street in the newer area of town, the cobbled and winding paths of the old town, lined with their quaint houses, make this a location where you can feel history at every turn. And indeed, history is something of which there is no lack in Tábor.
As the town he conquered was not encircled by walls, he chose a place near the same river, a place which was naturally protected by its location. He built walls around it and ordered his people to build houses in the same way as they used to build tents.
This is an extract from the Czech Chronicle by Eneas Silvio Pigolomini. It describes the foundation of a town called Hradiště on Mount Tábor by the famous Hussite captain Jan Žižka. In spite of its humble beginnings, this settlement was to become the modern-day town of Tábor. And indeed, true to the chronicle's description, the town affords commanding views of the surrounding countryside, making it no great wonder that it was built on this particular site. Zdeněk Vybíral of the Tábor Institute of Historical Research told me more about the town's foundation.
Český král Přemysl Otakar II tady založil druhé polovině 13. století.
The Czech king Přemysl Otakar II founded a royal town there in the second half of the 13th century, which was to function as a royal fortress. The town, however, didn't experience a great period of prosperity, and so we don't know much about it. The Hussite settlement appeared at the beginning of the year 1420, when the inhabitants from the surrounding area, namely from the nearby town of Sezimovo Ústí, gathered on a high hill, where there still stood the remains of the old royal town of the Přemysl dynasty. They decided to found a new settlement, a community of brothers and sisters, according to the teaching of Jan Hus, and so the town of Tábor, or as it was then called Hradiště on Mount Tábor, was founded.
The newly founded settlement soon became a centre for the Hussite movement, playing a key role in the country's politics, with a strong economy, its own armed forces, and even its own foreign policy. But the citizens of Tábor did not respect the authority of the Czech crown, even having been declared a royal town in 1437 by the then Czech king Sigismund of Luxembourg. This continued until 1452, when the town was forced to surrender to the troops of George of Poděbrady, and the proud citizens of Tábor finally bowed to royal authority. This brought an end to the turmoil of previous years, as Zdeněk Vybíral told me.
Ta přestávka ve válečných aktivitách přinesla ovšem Táboru možnost věnovat se vnitřnímu.
The break in military activity gave the city of Tábor an opportunity to flourish internally. The citizens of Tábor saw a long period of prosperity and built the town in the late Gothic style, something which was very new at the time. Large stone buildings began to appear, which served the whole community, including the town hall and the central church on the square. These buildings remain even today and are some of the most famous examples of medieval architecture in the Czech lands.
Obě tyto stavby stojí dodnes a patří k nejvýznamnějším památkám pozdně středověké architektury v Čechách.
Yet it is here, beneath the houses and shops above, where the town's most intriguing feature lies. Over 800 meters of winding tunnels, which weave their way under Žižka Square in the Old Town, are now accessible to the public, opened shortly after the Second World War. The labyrinth was originally intended for defensive purposes, as the town's citizens came up with an idea to construct a place where they could hide in case of danger.
Jak vznikl labyrint táborského podzemí? Na začátku byly především
důvody. The basis of the labyrinth was a connection of separate cellars beneath the houses in the historical center around Žižka Square, the hub of the old town. The townsfolk who owned these houses originally simply stored goods in the cellar, but in time they endeavored to link them together by means of a network of tunnels. So it would be possible to escape in the event of attack or fire, which had often engulfed the city in previous centuries. These passageways gradually spread and could be accessed through openings beyond the town walls, so that citizens could escape from the city in the case of any threat, from enemies or otherwise. The system of passageways eventually grew even further, but today only a small section is accessible, which links several cellar areas directly beneath Žižka Square. We know that the tunnels are more extensive, but it is not possible to delve any further due to the risk of cave-ins.
Není možný vstup kvůli nebezpečí ze zavalení.
But although one of the most charming features of the town, these atmospheric tunnels were not always used for honest purposes, as Zdeněk Vybíral explains.
Víme také ovšem, že ty chodby a sklepní prostory, tvořící tedy táborské podzemí...
We also know that the tunnels and storage areas beneath Tábor were used for the preservation of certain precious items, but often this was for harboring goods which weren't entirely legal, for example stolen merchandise. And there are even references in historical records to suggest that the slaughter of animals and swine and pig sticking, which was very popular at the time, used to occur down there. It came to the point where a man could steal a pig or some poultry from his neighbour and would use the labyrinth as somewhere to hide as he worked.
A samozřejmě potřeboval to někde v skrytu zpracovat, takže to provedli asi v tom podzemí.
From its Hussite beginnings to its status in the 21st century as a popular location for tourists, Tábor has survived some turbulent times. But what is it that makes the town so popular now, over 500 years since the foundation of the first settlement? I put this question to Lenka Horejsková, the head of Tábor's Department of Culture and Tourism.
My vlastně ty poslední roky skutečně sledujeme takové oživení zejména v té historické části, která
Especially in recent years we have seen a real revival of interest in the historical part of town. 10 years ago, for example, when I started working here, there was only one restaurant and tourists barely stayed in the city longer than to look through the museum. Today, it's hard to find a table in any restaurant without a reservation. I think that Tábor is popular solely thanks to its historical traditions and the collection of monuments which is found here.
Množství památek, které se tady nacházejí.
And so it seems that in some ways, the past really has caught up with Tábor. And with the number of visitors to the town still increasing year by year, its rich and curious past brings hope for continued interest in the future.
That edition of Spotlight by Chris Jarrett, which I believe was never repeated, was first broadcast in 2006. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to comment on that visit or on anything else you've heard here at Radio Prague, please do so by writing to our address, english@radio.cz, or to our street address, Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. We're always happy to hear from our listeners, and some of your comments or questions might even make it onto the air in our mailbox program hosted by Pavla Horáková. So please do keep those emails and letters coming. And now it's time for Czech books. This Friday was the 69th anniversary of one of the defining moments of World War II, the destruction of the village of Ligice near Prague by the Nazis on June 10th, 1942. Over the next few weeks, the actress Veronica Hicks We'll be reading from the moving biography of Jaroslava Skleničková, one of the survivors of the Lygice massacre. David Vaughan introduces the first episode.
When the English translation of Jaroslava Skleničková's memoirs was published last year, I was approached by Jamie Athill from the British Embassy in Prague, who asked me if I had any idea how it could be promoted. By then I had already read the book, which bears the stark and self-explanatory title, If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot, and I knew that it was a powerful and moving account of Jaroslava's life. As well as the vivid picture it paints of the Lidice tragedy and life in the Ravensbrück concentration camp, the book's great strength is the way Jaroslava puts these events into the context of her life as a whole, and reflects, sometimes with surprising conclusions, on how they changed her view of the world. Today, Jaroslava and her husband Mirek live in one of the houses built in the post-war Lidice, and it was there that they celebrated their diamond wedding anniversary earlier this year. Recently, an audiobook was made of the original Czech version of Jaroslava Skleničková's book, and this gave me the idea of doing the same with the English translation. The British actress Veronica Hicks, herself of Czech origin, came to hear about the project, and without hesitating she flew over to Prague, at her own expense, to make a recording of the book. The resulting CD is currently being put together by the publishing arm of Czech Radio, Radio Service. In Czech books over the next few weeks, we shall be hearing an abridged version of the book, as read by Veronica Hicks. Here is the first episode, evoking a pre-war childhood in a typical Czech village.
If I'd been a boy, I would have been shot. The story of the youngest of the women of Lidice. By Jaroslava Skleničková. Translated by Lucy Doležalová and Tamara Volejníková. Extracts read by Veronica Hicks. Recorded in the studios of Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Childhood. My father, Jaroslav, was born on March the 1st, 1892. His life began in the tiny village of Rosnice, near Hradec Králové, where his parents had a small farm. My grandmother was very religious and would have been happy to see him as a priest. However, he rejected this idea, and so, after finishing school, he was apprenticed in Hradec Králové to become a confectioner. He was the youngest and tallest of four brothers. He was well over 6 foot, which was a lot then, but mainly he was very thin. Someone alarmed my grandmother that he could get consumption, as tuberculosis was called at that time, and advised her to get him trained to be a cook. That as such, he would at least get enough to eat. Grandmother agreed, and so father learned how to cook in Prague, at the National House. Later he worked there as a chef and also gave lessons in preparing food. My mamma was named Anna. She was born in Lidice, near Kladno, on May the 22nd, 1895. She had a younger sister, Maria. Their parents had a pub in Lidice, to which was attached a small farm. My grandfather, Josef Votruba, found his wife in Lidice and came to live there. My mamma did very well at school, so grandfather decided she would go on studying. At that time there were few opportunities for girls to study. Her only chance was a school training teachers in needlework. However, when she failed to get in on her second try, she stayed at home with her parents till the end of the war. And in 1919, she went to Národní dům, the National House in Prague, to learn cooking. My papa used to say that of all the girls, she was the most skillful. So it's not surprising that it all ended in a wedding. The wedding day was April the 21st, 1921, and it took place in the St. Wenceslas Church at Smíchov in Prague. The wedding breakfast was in the municipal house, followed by a later meal in the Šlechtová restaurant in Stromovka Park, ending with an evening visit to a cabaret of Karel Hašle, whom my father was very fond of. My parents had a son in January 1922. He was called Yaroslav. The birth was very difficult. The doctor had to use forceps. And, what is more, he was very young and had little experience, and he damaged the child's head. The little fellow cried and cried for 3 weeks, and then died. My mother could never get him out of her mind. The same year, on December the 29th, a daughter, Miloslava, was born. Probably because mother had given birth twice in 1 year, the child was tiny. In 1926, I was born, on the 27th of March. My parents longed to have a son, and when it didn't work out, I was at least named after my father, Yaroslava. Because I was born in the spring, Yaro, and my mama probably thought it too hard-sounding to call me by the shortened version of the name Yarka, she changed it to Yashi. After that, no one called me anything else. When I was born, grandfather told her something, which mother afterwards often recalled. Don't make a fuss that it's another girl. I used to be disappointed to have only daughters, too. Then the First World War came, and I was very happy that they were girls. How his words were confirmed in 1942. If I'd been a boy, I would have been shot in Lidice. In Lidice, Papa upheld the Spa fashion. He went for walks in the fields dressed up, wearing a tie and his boots well polished. He took care of his health and would exercise to the radio every morning for a quarter of an hour. He didn't smoke and only drank beer when it went with a meal. He loved us children very much and saw to it that the family was materially secure. Mama, in her turn, was in charge of the household and everything connected with it. She saw that all bills and taxes were paid, money to be saved, put in the bank, insurance covered. I think they complemented each other excellently. I had three girlfriends in Lidice. Máňa Muláková, who was 1 year younger than I, and went to the grammar school. The second one was Maruška Šroubková, who was the same age as Máňa. I used to go to their farm every evening for milk, and until they'd finished milking, I used to play whist with her grandfather. Sometimes I was kept so long that Papa would be looking out for me at the gate. I used to cycle with Maruška to school in Buštěhrad. When it rained or the weather was bad, her father would harness the horses to the carriage, and we travelled like duchesses. My third friend was Věnka Puchmetrová, who was 2 years younger than I. But the boys were already making eyes at her. From her home, which was on top of the hill above our house, we would whiz down in winter on a sledge. The local policeman, Mr. Vandredle, would chase us off this road and declare that he was going to fine us 5 crowns. When I complained to Papa about this, he straight away gave me 10 crowns and said I should pay for the sleighing in advance. I finished secondary school in Buštěhrad in 1941. Of primary importance for Papa was our health, while Mama was concerned with our education. She decided on a 2-year commercial school in Prague, which was also a boarding school. It was run by nuns who lived on the first floor. We lived on the second floor, across the corridor from our classroom. The rooms were interconnected, and there were 5 to a room. Each of us had our own bed, a bedside table, and a wardrobe. In the next room there were only three girls. A nun named Berta, whose bed, which was hidden from view by a folding screen, took up a third of the room. Our class teacher was Sister Svatova, who taught us the Czech and German languages. During the occupation of our country, every one of us was afraid of the German school inspector. And so we all had to purchase a German magazine for young people, Kraft durch Freude, or Strength through Joy. From it we were expected to learn by heart an article singing the praises of a young boy from the Hitler Jugend, or Hitler Youth, who fell in the war. How did we learn it? The girls from our dormitory all got into bed. In front of my bed I placed the bedside table, and Alena, who slept beside me, poured some of her iron fortified wine for anemia into a glass. I represented Hitler and began to declaim the article. I made pauses while reading, as he did in his speeches, and the other girls started to bang on their bedheads. Only Zhovka curled under her feather bed and started to cram using a flashlight. All the same, the next day she didn't know anything, just as the rest of us didn't. In a moment, Sister Berta came to find out what the noise was. I explained that we were all learning together. Luckily, the German inspector did not come to our school for the whole year. Of all the girls, I got on best with Nadia. She seemed to me to be the most sincere. Opposite the school, on the other side of the square, was the cinema Waldeck. In the autumn, around All Souls Day, in 1941, they were showing a love story, and Sister Berta would certainly not allow us to go and see it. I was wondering how to get to the cinema. I told Berta that I wanted to show Nadia the Olshany Cemetery. We left the boarding house and went along the side streets to bypass the square and got into the cinema. When the film ended, we went contentedly back until, in the lift, we realized that we did not look at all as if we'd spent 2 hours in the frosty air. We started to slap each other's cheeks. When later we announced our return to Sister Berta and told her about the graves covered in flowers and lighted candles, she praised us how the air outside had reddened our cheeks.
Veronica Hicks was reading the first part of If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot by Yaroslava Skleničková. We'll be bringing you the second part on the 25th of June.
And do join us for the second episode of that edition of Czech Books produced by Veronica Hicks and David Vaughan. Now, of course, this is weekend programming here at Radio Prague, but don't forget you can listen to us anytime, anywhere over the internet. Our website is radio.cz/en, where you'll find all the latest in politics, culture, arts, and science. So please do visit our website and let us know what you think. There's lots of discussion going on, either on Facebook or even on Twitter. So look us up if you can. We turn to today's final feature now, though, which is from the archives, also with David Vaughan.
Od dalším rozhovoru přístím kancléře po zjištění situace rozhodl jsem se prohlásit.
The voice of the Czechoslovak president Emil Hácha, speaking 69 years ago this week, on March the 14th, 1939. He had just returned from Berlin, where Hitler had given him a simple ultimatum, either face occupation or destruction. Hácha chose occupation, and the next day German troops marched unopposed into Prague. After a long conversation with the Reichschancellor, Hácha said, and after considering the situation, I have decided to place forthwith the fate of the Czech state with full confidence into the hands of the Führer of the German nation.
Že odevzdávám osud českého národa a státu plnou důvěrou do rukou vůdce německého národa.
German troops marched into Prague the next day, on March the 15th, 1939. Ever since the Munich Agreement less than 6 months before, it had been only too clear that Hitler's claim that the Czechoslovak borderlands, the Sudetenland, had been his last territorial claim in Europe, was anything but the truth. He had systematically put ever greater political and economic pressure on Czechoslovakia. The country de facto ceased to exist when Slovakia broke away on March the 14th and became a puppet state of Germany. 4 days after the German troops swept into the Czech capital, the popular Czech broadcaster František or Franta Kocourek was given the awful task of reporting live on a huge military parade from the top of Wenceslas Square, with an officer of the Wehrmacht by his side. His extraordinary, at times cryptic report captured the despair of the nation.
Nyní právě projíždějí kolem ohromná děla protiletecká.
At this moment, huge anti-aircraft guns are passing, pulled on tractors, each manned by 12 soldiers. Behind them are further smaller anti-aircraft guns and searchlights. But I would also like to talk about one thing that has nothing to do with the military. From somewhere far away, a huge black crow has flown into Prague. I have seen it spread its wings and sweep down above the square over the searchlights and the listening devices being paraded here by the German army. It must be surprised at the noise and all that is going on beneath it. This and similar broadcasts were to cost Franta Kocourek his life. He was later arrested and perished in 1942 in Auschwitz-Birkenau.
From the archives with David Vaughan brings us to the end of today's program. If you'd like to comment or write any questions for us, please do so by writing to english@radio.cz. Otherwise, enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'm Jan Vellinger. Bye-bye. Thank you.
vous écoutez Radio Prague.